In Conversation with Uaisí Fógarty on Radio Kerry.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to the programme. Uaisí Fógarty with you for the next hour. You're listening to an interview that I did with the legendary Charlie Chaplin's daughter, Annie Chaplin, down in Waterford. Thanks to Tony Donnelly, who fixed that up for me. Who was Charlie Chaplin? How great was he? Some few years ago, Robert Downing Jr., he took the part of Charlie Chaplin in a film about the great man's life, and he was asked some time after, what was it like? Who was Charlie Chaplin? Have a little listen first to Robert Downing Jr.
Hi, I'm Robert Downey Jr., and I have a pretty good idea of who Charlie Chaplin was. Well, I'd better, since I had the amazing good fortune and petrifying responsibility of portraying him in Chaplin, the first film ever made about his life. Now, I say pretty good idea of who he was because, like most enigmatic figures, he's elusive. However, 18 months of research brought forth an avalanche of information. His is the classic rags-to-riches story, the Cinderella of the 20th century. By the age of 25, Charles Spencer Chaplin had come from the poverty of Victorian South London to be the most famous man in the world. A one-man Beatles, years before the birth of radio and television. Some say he single-handedly changed motion pictures from a novelty to an art form. One of the greatest challenges in shooting Chaplin was the recreation of the tramp. I mean, how do you do it? Some say he's still the most recognizable image on the planet, though the descriptions vary from half ballerina, half elephant, to the more esoteric reincarnation of the great god Pan. Chaplin described him as a gentleman, a poet, a dreamer, always hopeful of romance. And Sir Laurence Olivier described Chaplin as the greatest actor of all time.
That's Robert Downing Jr., and he was talking there about Charlie Chaplin, but he had another little bit to say about Charlie Chaplin, and it's nice to get a little idea what the man was all about. A little snippet there of Charlie Chaplin, and we'll be hearing more of that later on, because in The Great Dictator, one of the greatest films he ever made, he spoke for one of the first times in that. We'll be hearing a little few clips of that. Have you any memory of Charlie Chaplin going to the films and seeing him? Of course, there's a special statue erected below in Waterford. But I caught up with his daughter, Annie. She was on holidays some time ago in Waterford, and my good friend down there, Tony Donnelly, introduced me to her, and I had a little chat with her. So sit back now and listen to one of Charlie Chaplin's daughters. Annie, it's great to talk to you, a daughter of Charlie Chaplin's. Kerry is nearly your home, is it?
It is, because my mother and father came here in 1959, and I was born in 1959, so, and we used to come every Easter holidays, summer holidays, so it's my second home.
So Waterville in particular is very special to you?
Oh yes, it is, because as far as I remember, we've always used to go to the Butler Arms in Waterville and come here, go riding, fishing, have the best time ever.
What are your earliest memories of coming to Waterville, Annie?
The earliest memories, I remember my being quite frightened because my mother said it's by the ocean, and she loved the ocean. She said, it's wonderful, the ocean. And I said, but is the ocean, does the ocean go into the hotel? And then I saw it and I thought, this is the best place ever. And I must have been, I'd think, four, around that time.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your mother, of course. We'll talk about your mom first before we talk about your dad. Una O'Neill, a famous lady in her own right. Talk to us about your mom and your memories of her and her parents.
Well, my mother was an O'Neill, and our big satisfaction was to not say we had American blood, but Irish blood. I mean, that was what's... And she always said, you know, you're half Irish. And Eugene O'Neill, of course, was such a figure of being such a romantic figure and a wonderful playwright. I think Ireland and my mother's side is really important to us, and a very romantic idea of our blood.
And of course, the name O'Neill is a great Irish name, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah. Have you relations now in Ireland, the O'Neills? Are you still in contact with your mother's people?
No, because they were... That goes back, I think, three generations. So, no. And as she didn't really get along with her father once she married my father, we really didn't know much about him, except for his wonderful plays and his art.
Yeah. And your mom, when did she die? Did she die a young woman?
She died, she was 65, and about, that was 13 years ago.
Yeah. Now, what is it like now, Annette, to carry the name Chaplin? I mean, every time that you're introduced anywhere, I presume everyone says, oh, are you daughter of Charlie Chaplin's? What's it like to carry that name throughout your life?
Well, I think there could be a worse name. So it's kind of, I guess it's magical in a way.
Yeah.
Afterwards, it's true that some points it's always difficult to be related to a person and not have your own identity, but I think any mother or father or name is always something to that you live with.
And could you give us any examples of going through life now in the name Chaplin, when you were going to school and when you were a young lady and when you were moving out? Were you always known as Charlie Chaplin's daughter?
I guess so. There comes a point you don't really realize about, you know, when you're a kid. I mean, friends are friends. And I was in a school, I think, where Chaplin didn't mean that much. We had the daughter of Yul Brynner who was there. And that was when he came to school to fetch his daughter. And that was the king and I. I mean, my father didn't mean much to us. It was Yul Brynner's daughter. I mean, I think you just live with it.
But still, at the end of the day, Charlie Chaplin is way more famous than Yul Brynner. With no due respects to Yul Brynner, your dad was one of the most legendary of all Hollywood actors. I mean, there's no doubt at all about it. The name Charlie Chaplin is synonymous with acting.
Yes, it is, but because he did everything. I mean, he was a director, the actor, made his own music, producer. So I think, and then he created that image of the tramp that I think even generation of the younger generation today hasn't really seen his films, but they know who Charlie Chaplin is, the figure, and that is, it becomes a myth.
It does indeed. Now, what are your memories of your dad, Annie? What are your earliest memories of him? And talk to us about what you remember about him.
Well, I was born, he was 70. So I knew a father who was old. Not that I realized he was old, but he was, of course, older than most fathers.
Yeah.
And someone who liked peace and quietness. You know, children were meant to be seen but not heard, old education. And but a very sweet man, very, very loving. We used to watch TV. I was petrified by him in a way because he had an authority without, you know, screaming or whatever. But then he look at you and points a finger and you just go white, thinking, what have I done? At the same time, you'd watch television holding my hand, you know, really sweet, tender father.
Would he talk about his life to you and talk about his films, and would he sit down with you and reminisce?
Not much. I think with the older kids, then, yes, he would talk. With we're eight of us, and the last four, I think, he didn't really bother. But then he'd occasionally say, you know, I'm a very, very important person. We'd say, yes, Daddy, of course.
Yeah. Have your memories of people calling to him, people looking for interviews, like I knew with an interview now. Have your memories of people wanting to know where he was? Could they meet him, or looking to meet him, or waiting for him?
Not much. I think in Switzerland, it's like here in Ireland, people are very discreet and respected a lot his intimacy. I knew later on I had a teacher at school who... I thought she was kind of unfair. She always used to give me bad notes, marks, you say?
Marks.
And I had to have it signed by my father. And later on I knew, and she said, you know, I was awfully unjust because I wanted the autograph.
That's a nice one. That's a good way of getting an autograph. Yes. That's a good way of, it is indeed. In relation with you mentioned your school in there and your lessons and things like that. We'll see a man that would stand over you and help you with your homework.
Oh, no, not at all.
No?
And he wasn't severe at all on the homework or what went on at school.
Yeah.
He was more... I think what terrified him more was if we had a relation with boys. That was something... I think, well, when he was a younger man, he liked very young girls. But we could have bad marks at school. It didn't really upset him or bother him. It wasn't...
Did your mom die before him? Your dad died on Christmas Day, didn't he?
He died on Christmas Day in 1977.
Yeah.
And my mother died, I think, something like 12 years after him.
Yeah.
If I can.
Now, your mom was very young when she married your dad. I think was she 18? And your
That's
dad,
right.
What your dad was?
53, I think.
53. Yeah. Now, how madly were they in love? What was their life like for you as one of their children?
I think that the relationship they had was completely... They were madly in love from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And I think my mother was absolutely... She couldn't take it when he died. Mm-hmm. And I think their love was more important than us kids,
yeah.
And it was just amazing. They never separated at all. I mean, yeah. Never went. I think my mother went to her mother's funeral for 3 days in America, and my father was completely lost. They just live 24 hours out of 24 together.
Yeah, that's lovely. How important now, Annie, in today's world, and I'm here with you in Waterville today, how important is it that your dad be remembered like we are remembering him now and passing on the message? How important is that to you, one of his children?
I think the most important to me would be that the films, that people see the films again, young people, because they're really, yeah. I'm his first a fan, and yeah. I can see those films over and over again. It's not, as I always say, it's not because it's my father, but really the imagination, the humanity, and the... modernity.
Yeah.
Are amazing.
Yeah. Do you know what we'll do? We'll go for a little break, and when we come back we'll talk about his films and you, what you take out of them and your memories of them.
In conversation with Uisce Fogarty on Radio Kerry. In conversation with Uisce Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
Yes, indeed, you're very welcome back to the programme. Charlie Chaplin made over 90 films. He was born in London and he died on the 25th of December 1977, aged 88 years. He died in Switzerland because he was an actor, as you see, and he was very active in the films from 1914 to 1976. So he had a very, very long career. He was married four times to Mildred Harris from 1918 to 1920, Lita Gray from 1924 to 1928, Paulette Goddard from 1936 to 1942, and to Una O'Neill from 43 to 1977, and it's to Una O'Neill's daughter that I'm talking to, Annie Chaplin. Annie, just before the break there, we were talking about your dad's films. Now, you say, do you look at them a lot and talk to me about what films that you like the best and his music and what do you think about when you're watching them?
Oh, I love watching his movies and I look at them quite a lot. Then there's different times I had my different favorites. For a long time, the Great Dictator, that, I mean, that's such a wonderful film. I love the ballet. He's a dancer in that film. It's so, and what a, I think even politically today, it's important to have that imagination and to go over the politics and become a poet. And but then I love City Lights. I love the music of City Lights. I like that romantic, fantastic romantic story. And so there's always a lot of love, a lot of fun, a lot of sadness in his films. And sometimes it depresses me because I think, where did he get the idea? I wish I could have find have his imagination. And he worked.
Yeah. Of course, he was a very adaptable person because he came up through the era of the silent films, and then he came into the talkies, and he really adapted. Talk to me about, explain to the younger generation of our listeners now and people that never saw a Charlie Chaplin film, his version of The Tramp and the silent movies, what he portrayed, because it was absolutely riveting and it was fascinating, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that image of the tramp is wonderful because he's a very, very aristocrat tramp.
Yeah.
And he goes everywhere, and he's always very dignified. But then you have to see the films. It's difficult to be able to have that same tramp in every film who goes through different stories, different times of life, different... moments. I mean, he's go and see the films, that's all I can say. Yeah.
And of course the walking stick was a trademark of his, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, he found that character looking through costumes, and he said if I find a certain way of dressing, then I'll find the character. Yeah. And that's what happened. He found the hat, the stick,
yeah, and the suit
and the shoes. Yeah.
Have you ever dressed up like your dad with the walking stick? I presume you have, portrayed him.
Oh no, I would never do that. I'd never do that, sure. Because it's not. I mean, it's him. It can only be him.
And getting back to your dad again, did he talk to you about other film stars? And did film stars visit him when he was in his latter years? And who did you meet through your dad?
Not many people, because again. When I knew him much older, and he was, I think, trying to work on the music of his films, and he wasn't very well for quite a long time, and I remember he had a few strokes, I think.
Yeah.
So the regular friends were Walter Matthau and his wife. Who did we see? A wonderful gypsy singer who might not mean anything to you, called Manitas de Plata.
Yes.
Yes.
I heard the name, yeah.
And that's about it.
Yes, yeah. How did his relationship come with Waterville, Annie? Have we any idea the first time? How did he fall in love with Waterville so far down in the south of Ireland?
My mother was really desperate to go to Ireland to find her background, and
yeah.
And they were supposed to go somewhere else, and the place was packed, I think. But it was a hotel, I couldn't remember where. And someone said, I think it was his publisher, he was writing his memoirs at the time, and I think it was his publisher who said, but there's a lovely place, wild and beautiful, and there's a really family hotel there. In Waterville, and they came to Waterville, and then immediately my father fell in love with the place, and the hotel was owned by a couple, the Huggards, and I think my mother and Mrs. Huggard were pregnant at the same time.
Really?
So, yeah. And they looked alike.
Yeah,
it was. And I think it's just, you know, it's the coup de foudre, as you say.
Yeah, and of course your dad will never be forgotten in Waterville, because just up around the corner here, there's what? A little
statue. Yeah, statue. My father.
How important is that to you and your family?
Oh, it's very touching, because you go walk by the sea and you see people coming down from buses and having their picture taken with him, and it's very touching.
Do you stand back now and watch this and wonder?
It's a great... I mean, it's... It's wonderful to see pictured, you know, people just taking pictures and next to him.
Very few people alive have statues of their father, isn't that right? So you're very privileged in that way too.
I guess I am, yes.
Now, there was 8 in your family, as you said, Annie. Were you the youngest, and what were the names of the rest of your family, and where are they now?
So I'm not the youngest. I've got a younger brother, Christopher, who's a writer and a pilot.
Right.
And then my eldest sister is Geraldine, who's an actress. Then there's my brother Michael, Josephine, Victoria, Eugene, Jane, myself, and Christopher. Victoria's works. She's a circus. She has a circus with her husband.
Yeah.
Show. Yeah. They're all around the world.
Yeah.
Very well known. And Josephine has a house in Ireland as well, in Washerville.
Yeah. So did you, were you all together for a long time? Did you grow up in Switzerland, or where did life bring you, Annie?
Well, the 4 elder ones were born in America,
right.
And then my father came to Switzerland, and the youngest ones were born in Switzerland. And I live now in Paris, and as well in the Loire-et-Cher, a place called Montoire, where I've bought with my husband a silo that we've transformed in a theatre.
Yeah.
So I act, and my husband directs.
Yeah.
And we put on lots of plays. Other companies come and visit us or play for us, and musicians, dancers.
Yeah. So you're on holidays here in Ireland now, in Waterford at the moment. So what happens to the theatre?
So far it's closed, and we're opening in November. So I go back in middle of August, start rehearsing.
Yeah. Yeah. And is this your life?
Oh, yes, definitely. My life, I have 2 passions, theatre and horses.
Yeah. And of course, there's no doubt at all about it. I suppose most of the family have theatre or acting or writing or something. It's passed on in the blood. Is it all part of you, of the 8 in your family, one way or the other?
It's half and half. I'm the only one that's doing theatre.
Yeah.
Then there's Geraldine doing films, Vicky circus. And then the boys haven't really been in that direction. So I don't know if it's in the blood, but I guess maybe it is a little.
Without delving and being too personal about your dad, was he a wealthy man? Did he come out of his career as a wealthy man? You would often hear of famous film stars, of famous sports people who would lose everything. Did he come out of it okay?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
And I think he was lucky because he was known really young, so he made money in his late 20s.
Yeah.
And his brother said, I'll take care of the finance part.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't a spender because I think his passion was films, work.
And of course, he's the products of Charlie Chaplin are still in sale all around the world. It's a brand name, really, isn't it?
A brand name, that means a...
That means that the name Charlie Chaplin would sell anything today, wouldn't it? And it still does.
It does. It doesn't as much as it used to, but it does. I mean, it is as I say, the character is a myth, so anyone recognizes that little tramp.
Yeah. But do you think in years to come, Annie, and around the corner, that the product Charlie Chaplin and the name and the films, there'll be a big revival and people will queue up to see them all again?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
No. Because I think it's very difficult now to get kids to watch black and white silent movies. I think it will. My sister Josephine and her son are trying desperately to get, you know, to continue. But I don't really know, but I doubt that it'll be that people will queue up to see.
Yeah. Was your dad very musically minded?
Oh, yes. He loved music. And at the end of his career, that's all he did, was because he was pretty sick, but he could. He was still composing for shorter films, his own music.
What were his favourite musical themes, or what songs? Can you remember anything about him singing them or speaking to you about them?
No, he has two songs, Smile and Swing Little Girl in the Circus.
Yeah.
No, he listened to a lot of classical music, mainly.
Do you know, we'll go for another break. It's fascinating talking to you. And when we come back, we'll have another chat about your dad, where he came from. Of course, he was an Englishman, wasn't he? Born in England.
Yes, that's right.
In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry. In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
Yes, indeed, you're very welcome back to the programme. I'm talking to Annie Chaplin. I recorded the programme some weeks ago down in Waterville, and I want to thank my good friend Tony Donnelly, the former Waterville footballer who fixed that up for me, and indeed my good friend Christy Reid of CR Videos and Cass Levine, who provided me with the extracts of what we'd be playing. And you're going to hear one of those now, one of the most famous of all, Chaplin's extracts from one of his films. Because when he was writing The Great Dictator in 1939, Chaplin was as famous worldwide, would you believe, as Hitler. And his tramp character wore the very same moustache. And in the film, The Great Dictator, the film ends with a now famous and humanitarian speech made by the barber, the man that he was playing in that film. The film was Charlie Chaplin's first talkie, as well as his most commercially successful films. And it was released in October 1940, and it bitterly satirizes Nazism and also Adolf Hitler, culminating in the over-political plea to fight fascism. A wonderful speech. Sit back and listen to Charlie Chaplin, his own speech written by himself from The Great Dictator.
Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Absolutely riveting stuff there from Charlie Chaplin from that film, The Great Dictator. And it was recognized as one of the most famous and humanitarian of all speeches in any film. And the film was released in 1940. Do you know what? We'll have another little snippet from that, because I think that I have never heard it before. And I think it's worth listening to another little piece.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish.
Charlie Chaplin's wonderfully riveting speech from the great dictator, of course, was over a political plea to defy fascism at the particular time. And if you listen to the words carefully, which it does. Charles Spencer Chaplin was born in London, England on April the 16th, 1889. His father was a versatile vocalist and actor, and his mother, known under the stage name of Lily Harley, was an attractive actress and singer who gained a reputation for her work in the light opera field. Charlie was thrown on his own resources before he reached the age of 10, as the early death of his father and the subsequent illness of his mother made it necessary for him and his brother Sidney to fend for themselves. And after inheriting natural talents from their parents, the youngsters took to the stage as the best opportunity for a career, and he made his professional debut as a member of a juvenile group called the Eight Lancashire Lads and rapidly won popular favour as an outstanding tap dancer. Charlie Chaplin went on to make 90 films, and as I said originally, he died in Switzerland on the 25th of December 1977, and he was in acting from 1914 to 1976. He was married four times, and I'm talking to one of his daughters by his last marriage, to Una O'Neill, a lovely lady, Annie. When we come back, we'll have some more of her interview.
In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry. In conversation with Wishy Fogarty on Radio Kerry.
C'est Bella Giustatore, j'ai notre soccatore, j'ai notre citavore, j'ai la coulette qui la toi. La spinage au la bouchon, cigarette portobello, si raquis pas que les beaux, si le tout là, si la toi. Pilatine, voulez-vous la teximine, le zionta sous la cita, tout la tout la tout la wa.
Yes, indeed. Lovely stuff there from Charlie Chaplin. And to be quite honest about it, I don't know what film is that from. I'm not 100% sure. Actually, it's from Modern Times. Modern Times, which was released in 1936. Great stuff altogether there. Now, so we'll return to have a little chat with Annie Chaplin again when I met her below in Waterford, and my good friend, as I say, and I'm very grateful to Tony Donnelly for fixing me up with that interview, and for Christy Reardon, who provided me with the extracts there. Christy, you see our videos in Castlevine. And now, have another listen to Annie Chaplin, and that when I met her below in Waterford. And your own visits to Waterford now, we were just chatting there, you do a lot of jogging, you do a lot of relaxing, and you're just after buying a horse.
Yes, a lovely horse called Daisy, who's a year old, and I bought her yesterday.
Yeah.
And so she's coming to France. That's my latest daughter.
Yeah, lovely. Now, getting back to your dad again now, he was married, was it four times?
He was married four times, and yeah, my mother was his last wife.
Yeah. And how many children had he with his previous marriages?
So he had two, Charlie Jr. and Sidney, my half-brother,
yeah,
with his second wife.
Yeah.
And so that he had 10 kids.
Yeah. Now, do you get together? Are you still in contact? And do you have any family reunions?
We don't really have family reunions. We're all in contact, and it's just we gossip a lot. The girls are very much together, and
yeah,
and so are the boys. It's complicated because there's so many grandchildren as well. Yeah. That a reunion, I don't know where we could have it. No one has a big enough house.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, when I just met you, when I walked into your home here in Waterville, the first thing that struck me was that you were so like your father in stature, and you had the eyes and all like him, and the big smile like him. Now, what do people say about you in resemblance to Charlie Chaplin?
I think we all look a little bit like our father and yeah. mother. In fact, they resembled each other in a way.
Yeah.
And so we've got the big forehead, big teeth.
Big smile.
And I'm the prettiest one, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I'd agree with you there. You are indeed, yeah. You are. But you do resemble your dad.
I guess so. I can see a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. At the very start of the interview, I said to you about going through life with the Chaplin name. What has the Chaplin name done for you? Has it opened doors to you?
It's opened doors, obviously. I think it's easier to meet people in the acting business. When I was younger, I started, and it's easier to get an agent. At the same time, I guess your people wait a lot, so it's kind of it's not that easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you travel a lot? Where have you traveled yourself?
I used to travel a lot. I travel less now. I don't like being a tourist that much. Mm-hmm. I like to go to work. I was working for a. Maurice Béjart dance company.
Yeah.
And we traveled a lot. That was fun. Japan, Israel. Where did we go? Germany, France, Greece.
Yeah, that lady did a lot of traveling. Of course, as she said there herself, her name, the Chaplin name, brought her to a lot of places around the world. It opened a lot of doors. So a lovely, lovely lady, I can tell you, that any Chaplin was. And eventually, anyway, I was asking her about Waterville and how did she enjoy it back there. And we finished up our afternoon. I spent a good bit of time with her. And we finished up like this. And what does Kerry mean to you? What does Waterville mean to you? And how much do you enjoy coming here?
Oh, I love it coming here. I really do. And I think it means I've been here ever since I was born, and I think it runs in the family. We always say Ireland is the most beautiful place in the world, and Kerry is the most beautiful place in the world. And it's the ocean, the wilderness, the people, wonderful people, the music.
Nice people. You have a great friend down here, Tony Donnelly, who invited me down to talk to you.
Oh, yeah, Tony. I love Tony and Elena. Yeah, no, they're fantastic. I've known them forever, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they're great, great people.
Yeah. And anybody else that you'd like to mention about your Kerry connections?
Oh, yes, there's a lot of people. Debbie, Patrick. In memory, the Huggards, they were great. I met Siobhan last year, and we were kids together.
And do you find that when you come here on holidays to Kerry, that even though you are Charlie Chaplin's daughter and Una O'Neill's daughter, that people don't bother you? You don't have people like me annoying you and knocking at your door wanting to get a photograph taken with you? Or have you got your photograph taken with your dad's statue, I presume you have?
Not with the statue here, no, not yet. No.
Not yet. There's a first, is there?
Well, I can't take the picture myself, so...
Yeah. So finally, Annie, to finish up, and your memories now of your dad, and your memories of your final memories of your dad and your mom, and why were they so special?
I think all parents are special. I think whatever, or not. But they were very loving people, and I think the love between each other was quite unique.
Yeah.
And I think that was an example... For me, anyway, the only thing that is important in life, I think, is love. The rest doesn't really matter.
Yes, yeah. Smee, once again, it was lovely talking to you. And you're always welcome in Kerry, of course. It is great to have Charlie Chaplin's daughter remembering him and your mother here in Waterville. And enjoy the rest of your holiday, and long may you keep coming to Kerry.
Thank you very much.
We will sing our circle tales. We will smile until our bed, and you will be all modesty.
Yes, indeed. That's Charlie Chaplin, one of his movies from the 30s, signing us out. I want to thank his daughter, Annie, for facilitating me with that interview and everybody who helped. And she's spending a good bit of her time in Watford now. The South Kerry people are lucky to have her. I'll be back on Monday night with Terrace Talk. Don't miss it. We have some very special interviews coming up with that. David was on sound. Tanya was taking your call. Thank you, the listener. All the best.